Dynamite Kid who? Well, at this point, these fans may not know who Dynamite Kid is. But if you want to know much more about wrestling, you want to listen to the Cell Monster Sounds Off podcast, which you can find on iTunes and SEScoops.com.
Who? Salamander Sue? Well, who's that?
The Cell Monster Sounds Off podcast. The gentleman I interviewed earlier on.
Yeah, I try not to pay attention to you that much.
I want to give a shout-out to my buddy James Alexander, the lead play-by-play announcer for the World of Unpredictable Wrestling, showing some love for the Sound Off. Unfortunately, his broadcast partner, whose name I don't even know, I think we're going to have to smarten him up. We're going to have to do something about that guy. Next WUW show for those of you in the Brooklyn, New York area, by the way, at Gleason's Gym, Saturday, August 27th. So definitely check that out. This is Sound Off episode 168. Here on SEScoops.com, it is Saturday, July 16, 2011. I am the Solemn Monster. Big show, big weekend, big pay-per-view coming up. Money in the Bank, WWE, we're going to talk about that. Got some predictions here on tap. Talk about Raw, talk about the second straight week of TNA Impact. That's right, I checked Impact out, start to finish, 2 weeks in a row, and I survived. I actually have lived to tell the tale, so I'll get into that a little bit later on as well. First things first, I just want to send out some condolences to former WWE and TNA executive Terry Taylor, whose wife Trudy died on Thursday after a long bout with cancer. I'm not sure what kind of cancer. I guess they're keeping that private. But I had heard stories about, you know, her struggling with the disease for quite some time, and it's kind of a similar situation to Jeff Jarrett, whose wife went through a similar ordeal. I think she had cancer, went into remission, it came back, and this kind of went on over the course of a couple of years. And believe you me, cancer is not a fun thing. It sucks. And condolences out to Terry Taylor, who was only recently fired by TNA. He was let go, and there were rumors that his name was floating around and some sexual harassment lawsuits that were filed against the company. Be that as it may, he's going through a rough time right now, and so certainly our thoughts are with him. Money in the Bank. That's really what this weekend is all about. The big WWE pay-per-view coming up tomorrow night, this Sunday, in Chicago at the Allstate Arena, the hometown of one CM Punk, who is wrestling, according to him, his last match for now in a WWE ring. I have not heard anything different. I have heard nothing that would lead me to believe that the two sides have come to an agreement that he has signed a new contract, and even if he has signed a new contract, wouldn't shock me if he came to some sort of deal already with WWE. That doesn't mean that he's going to be on Raw the next night. You know, he could reach a new deal with WWE so they know that he's still in the fold and cannot contractually go anywhere else, and Punk can still go ahead and take 6 months off. I tend to believe that this is it. Punk will, well, I guess you never know if Punk will be on Raw the next night, but I take him at his word. I've heard nothing that would lead me to believe otherwise. I really think he's burned out. I really think that, you know, even if he had all of these issues and grievances with the company, and they came to an understanding and they said, you know what, we're willing to give you what you want. We'll give you more money. We'll hire some of your friends that you feel were unfairly fired from the company. Whatever the case may be, I still believe that Punk needs and wants time off regardless. So this is probably the end for CM Punk for now. And if that's the case, it's really a shame, because here's a guy who has set the wrestling world on its ear over the last couple of weeks. And it's kind of funny the way it all worked out. We haven't really seen a, quote, different CM Punk. This is who he is. You know, this is who Punk always was. What we've seen is that WWE has allowed him to go out on television and do and say many of the things that I'm sure a lot of guys in the locker room would like to do. And they've turned it into a storyline. Obviously, he's not going out there and just shooting 100% from the hip every single week. But as I've said before, some of the best characters and the best storylines are based on real emotion. And if you read the GQ interview, which I linked to on my Twitter page at twitter.com/Solemonster, CM Punk did a, you know, he sat down for an hour with a reporter from GQ magazine and did this interview. It's online. It's 4 pages. Really, really, really good, really honest stuff. You can argue whether or not Punk is still kind of working people in the article, and, you know, he still says some nice things about the company. Yeah, because I don't believe Punk hates WWE. I think he hates certain aspects of it. I think he hates the grind. I think he's tired. But still, you will not find a more I think, honest, open interview with a superstar currently under contract to WWE, although, again, his contract is over. Nonetheless, a really good read. If you haven't read the interview, check it out. He talks about a lot of different things. Things, you know, that he's been punished for backstage, politicking in the company, wanting to work a match with Steve Austin, his thoughts about John Cena, his thoughts about his friends like Colt Cabana and Luke Gallows, who've been fired by WWE in the past. All these different things. And I thought it was kind of interesting at the beginning of the story how they mentioned, you know, Beth Phoenix. I guess the reporter went to Punk's apartment in Chicago and noted that Beth Phoenix was there. And that, I think, pretty much confirms what I had heard a while back about the two of them dating. So yet another diva that apparently CM Punk has sunken his claws into. Good for him. But in any event, it's the CM Punk show. That's really what the pay-per-view is on Sunday. They've sold me on it. You know, Money in the Bank last year, if I remember, was an excellent show. But it's an excellent show that very few people saw, because typically WWE does a piss-poor job of making these B-show pay-per-views seem special. And part of that is because there's so many of them, and I'm not a huge fan of these gimmick shows, but I will say this. Again, Money in the Bank last year, when the reviews came in, the people who saw the show loved it. They said the ladder matches were great. There was a great, if I remember, Jack Swagger, Rey Mysterio match, and a lot of good stuff on that show. On paper, going into this show, this looks like a better show, I think, on paper than last year's show looked like. And there's a lot of buzz going into it. I think I have to know that WWE understands the opportunity that they have here. They understand that they've got a lot of people talking about their product. A lot of people think all of a sudden wrestling is in some way cool again. You know, they have a reason to follow it, that somehow what's going on right now is a real-life situation unfolding before their very eyes, and they want to see how it turns out. You know, the knowledge that CM Punk is leaving the company doesn't matter. You know, they've been very open about that. It's not a question, at least in terms of how they're promoting this match. They're promoting it as Punk is leaving. And you would think, well, that kind of telegraphs the outcome of this match, but they've done a very good job of planting the seeds of doubt in people's minds. This guy might actually win the championship and walk out with it. Obviously, that's not going to happen, but I think they've done a good job of making some people, including people who listen to this show, believe that that actually might happen. So, let's just run down the card really quick here. I'll give some predictions. I'll start from the bottom up. Short card, not a lot of matches on the show. You got to give some time to the two ladder matches, obviously, and then the main event. There is a Divas Champion match on the show, Kelly Kelly defending against Brie Bella, a match that I could not possibly care any less about. Not their fault. They just have not given me a reason to give a shit about this match. They send Kelly out there with the Bellas every week. They're out there for 60 seconds. Match is over. Nothing happens. Why should I care? I'll just go with Kelly. Kelly retains. So then we have the SmackDown Money in the Bank ladder match. And quite an eclectic lineup here. You've got Heath Slater and Justin Gabriel. Now, Justin Gabriel, in all honesty, I could see, if pushed properly, I could see him being a big babyface. Potentially even a main event babyface in a couple of years, if they play their cards right. I know he was champion down at FCW when he used to be down there. So obviously they see something in him. Heath Slater, no offense, but Heath Slater in Money in the Bank, really? First of all, does anybody in their right mind actually think this guy has a shot of winning? Number one. Number two, what this match shows, if you look at the eight people in this match, it really shows how badly SmackDown is in need of some star power. This brand is in bad shape when it comes to marquee stars to kind of market, put in the main event picture. But it's an opportunity for guys in this match who wouldn't ordinarily be in a match on pay-per-view of this caliber. So Slater's in it. Gabriel's in it. We've got Daniel Bryan, Wade Barrett, Cody Rhodes, Kane, Sheamus, and Sin Cara. This is an opportunity, I think, for Sin Cara to really show his stuff in a match like this. I don't know how many ladder matches he was in down in Mexico. Probably not many, I would guess. But it's an opportunity for him to really wow people, I think. He doesn't even have to win this match. All he has to do is go in there and have a good showing, have a couple of spots. It's almost like the, quote, Shelton Benjamin position in the match, because when they first started doing Money in the Bank back in 05, 06, Shelton was in that first match. He might have been in the first few. And Shelton was the guy that people remember as, you know, he was jumping all over the place and putting his body in harm's way and just really dazzling the crowd. I think Sin Cara can play that role in this match, and he doesn't have to win. Plus, I don't think he's going to win. Plus, if he climbed to the very, very tippy top of the biggest ladder they have, I'm not even sure he's tall enough to reach up and grab the briefcase. So, as far as who goes over in this match, it really doesn't matter, to be honest with you. You know, if they wanted to, let's say, go with a Cody Rhodes. You know, Cody Rhodes is a guy who I could see as being a dark horse in this match. He has a history with Orton. If Orton is going to be the champion for the foreseeable future, Cody wins the briefcase, and in a couple of months, or SummerSlam or whatever, he cashes in. And you know, he's been hanging out lately with Ted DiBiase, although I guess they're teasing a breakup already between the two of them. But, you know, you go back to the Evolution, or rather the, not Evolution, the Legacy roots, and you can play off that if you want to. They've been pushing Cody pretty hard, so they must see something in the guy. Do I see Cody winning? No, I don't. My pick in the SmackDown match is Sheamus. You know, Sheamus, I was kind of surprised he wasn't added to the Orton-Christian match to make it a triple threat the way that he's been, you know, off and on kind of interjected in this feud over the last several weeks. And he's a guy who, you know, he used to get pushed a lot. He was the champion. Then he got deep pushed. Rumor was Kevin Dunn wasn't a big fan of his. But I think, again, they're in a situation now where they don't have a choice. You know, SmackDown does not have a lot of marquee power, like I said, and you've got a guy like Sheamus. A lot of people in the company like Sheamus. Orton has said, I mean, Orton did that radio interview, you know, speaking earlier when I was talking about Punk of brutally honest interviews. You know, the one exception may be that Randy Orton radio interview where he just went off and was talking crap about everybody. But he said he wishes that he could clone Sheamus and have 10 Sheamuses in the company. He really likes working with him. To me, that's a feud that you've already done. You know, when Sheamus was champion, I guess what would have been last summer, we had about three or four straight pay-per-view matches of Orton versus Sheamus. And now we see Orton versus Sheamus again. But I still think of all the people in this match, Sheamus probably deserves to win, probably will win. I don't know when he'll cash in. But it's interesting in that Mark Henry, as the rumor goes, is being groomed for a match or a feud with Randy Orton after the Christian feud runs its course. My guess is the Christian feud runs its course after this Sunday. God bless Christian, but you know what? They've run this thing into the ground. They beat Christian over and over and over again. And it's in one respect, it's great that Christian is the focal point of the shows. He's been in the main event picture now for about 2 or 3 months, but I think we've reached that point where it's time to move on. It's kind of like shit or get off the pot. Put the belt on Christian or just put somebody else in that position. And apparently they're building Mark Henry up to potentially be either the next challenger to Orton's title, or if Orton loses the belt, there may still be an Orton-Henry feud. It just may not be for the title. But if that's the case, then who's the champion and who's feuding with that person for the belt? These questions still have not been answered. So if they are grooming Mark Henry for that top spot, I'm not so sure the SmackDown Money in the Bank winner cashes in so quickly. But again, if I had to go for a pick in this match, Sheamus would be my guy. Speaking of Mark Henry one-on-one with the Big Show, this is an interesting match. And I say that because the build-up to this match has actually been pretty fucking good, I have to say. You know, that video package they ran on Raw Monday night, kind of showcasing the feud between Henry and Big Show and all of Mark Henry's feats of strength when he picks up Big Show and just slams him through the announce table. The spot in the steel cage match a couple of weeks ago where he wrecked the cage and knocked Big Show to the outside. Henry just losing it. SmackDown, last week, tossing that stagehand, the musician, whatever the hell he was, the music guy, just out of eyesight. I mean, again, it was an amazing spot, a great visually impressive spot. And if Mark Henry could just come out every week and beat the shit out of people and snort and jawjack back and forth with the fans and just look really mean and nasty, that would be one thing. He'd be the biggest star in the whole company. But as a wrestler, you know, his matches, it depends. It depends who he's in there with. You know, I didn't have a chance to see SmackDown last week. I guess, not last night, but the week before. And I know there was a Mark Henry-Kane match. Now, you hear Mark Henry versus Kane, and you think, holy shit. But from what I read, it wasn't a horrible match. Mark Henry is a guy who I think realizes this may be his last shot. You know, he's been with this company now for, God, I mean, what, 14 years, 15 years? He realizes he's not getting any younger. He's been with the company. He's had these start and stop pushes going all the way back to 1996. And I think he realizes that, you know, he got drafted over to SmackDown. They don't have a lot of star power on that show. This may be it for him. This may be his last shot. to be, if not a world champion, certainly a main event level guy. And, you know, maybe he's going in there with a new attitude in these matches. Maybe Mark Henry goes in there with the Big Show and they wrestle a different style match. It's not a wrestling match, it's like a fight. And it's just these two big guys going in there, butting heads and beating the crap out of each other. And it turns out to not be so horrible. Maybe so, but on paper, Mark Henry versus Big Show, eh. Hopefully this won't go too long. But the build-up to this and just the focus on Mark Henry as a monster has been phenomenal. And if they are building up Mark Henry to potentially be a challenger for Randy Orton, I don't see any outcome to this match making sense other than Mark Henry winning in some way, shape, or form. You can have Big Show get a fluky win and then Mark Henry beats him up after the match. Who does that really help? You know, it doesn't really help anybody. Just if you want to get behind the guy, he has to go over strong. He has to beat Big Show in this match. I'm going with Mark Henry. And that brings us to the Raw Money in the Bank ladder match. We have Alberto Del Rio, R-Truth, Jack Swagger, The Miz, Alex Riley, Evan Bourne, Kofi Kingston, and Rey Mysterio. Again, an interesting match. You can go a couple of different ways with this. You know, you can make the argument for a couple of different people to win this match. My pick in this match is Alberto. But the thing is, Del Rio doesn't have to win Money in the Bank to be in line for a shot or to cash in and become champion. Again, Del Rio already has a built-in storyline excuse why he should be the number one contender for the WWE Championship. You know, whatever happens with Cena and Punk at Money in the Bank, Del Rio can come out on Raw the very next night, Monday night, and say, listen, I got screwed. I beat Rey Mysterio on Raw 2 weeks ago. I was named number one contender. Vince McMahon reinstated CM Punk. He reinstated him right back into the main event. That should have been my match. I deserve a shot at the championship. And then you've got your SummerSlam main event. But to me, if Del Rio, it's so hard because, again, with the main event, they can go so many different ways with it. You can have, let's say, Punk win the title and then Del Rio, who won earlier in the night, comes out and cashes in. Or if Cena beats Punk, Del Rio comes out, cashes in, and wins the belt. So I'm going to go with Del Rio. I think, again, here's a guy who at one point was scheduled to win the World Heavyweight title at the Royal Rumble. And instead he was put in the Rumble match, the 40-man Rumble. He won the thing, went on to WrestleMania. The plan was that Del Rio was going to win the championship at WrestleMania. And then what happens? He opens the show. He curtain jerks WrestleMania with Edge, speared, pinned, 1-2-3. So much for destiny. Edge retires. It's Del Rio and Christian in a ladder match back at Extreme Rules. And when you look at the way Christian has been booked and how quickly they took the title off of him, I guess they just did it because they wanted a feel-good moment. Because clearly, Vince McMahon never really did have a change of heart. Vince McMahon clearly does not see Christian as world championship material. He just doesn't. Even if Christian wins the title this Sunday, Vince McMahon does not see Christian as a long-term viable option as a world champion. He never has. He never will. Why then did they not just put the title on Del Rio back in April? You know, I look back on it now and it's almost like I almost wish they would have just put the title on him back then. So I'm a little worried about him only because Del Rio has supposedly been scheduled to win the title now 3 or 4 different times, and every single time it's been foiled. And I'm starting to wonder if the guy is ever going to win the championship. But now it seems like now is the time. You know, he's been mired in this feud with Big Show for a while, which they've now thankfully moved beyond. That was a fucking waste of time. And really, that's all it was. It was a time killer, but still, it didn't do him any favors. And the only thing that came out of that whole thing, which was horrible, was the loss of Ricardo Rodriguez. Who, I mean, Del Rio was great, don't get me wrong, but Ricardo was as much a part of the act as anybody. And, you know, the way Big Show beat the crap out of him on Raw that 1 week, obviously you couldn't just have him come back the next week. And I sincerely hope, that they have not written him off and that Ricardo will be back maybe as early as the pay-per-view this Sunday. Maybe he'll pop in and somehow help Del Rio go over. I don't know, but not a whole lot of good came out of that feud for him. He really needs a lot of help right now. He needs to be looked at strongly. He needs to be booked strongly. People need to take him seriously. He has to look good in this match, and I think Del Rio is the man in the Raw Money in the Bank match. But again, you can make the argument that, hey, R-Truth should win Money in the Bank. And then depending on what they do in the main event, R-Truth cashes in at the end of the night, and he loses. He could do the same thing with The Miz. Miz won Money in the Bank, I think, at the pay-per-view 1 year ago. Have Miz go over again. Mr. Money in the Bank. Miz tries to cash in at the end of the night and loses. I would not do that. Miz has not been booked to look very strong at all since WrestleMania. The last thing I would want to do is make Miz look like an even bigger fool by winning Money in the Bank, cashing in on the same night, and then losing. But they could do something like that. But I'm going to go with a conservative prediction here. I'm going to go with Alberto. I think it's a safe pick. I think it's the pick that makes the most sense. I think he's going over in Money in the Bank. Randy Orton and Christian for the World Heavyweight title. I guess they've added the stipulation that if Orton either tries to get himself... I don't even know the stipulation. I think if he tries to get himself disqualified or if there's some sort of referee shenanigans, then Christian automatically wins the championship. So basically, they're setting it up where if Christian does win the title, nobody in the world could possibly take it seriously because it'll be a fluky win. So the way I look at this, Orton goes over. Orton should go over. I mean, it's blatantly obvious. They don't see Christian as being championship material. And you know what? That's cool. Hey, if that's the way they feel about it, then fine. It's time to cut bait and move on. Orton has beaten Christian at every single opportunity. Every single time. I see no reason why this would be any different. And if the rumor is true and they're setting Mark Henry up to be the next opponent for Orton, then obviously they're already looking beyond Christian. So my pick in this match, as much as it pains me to say it, is Randy Orton. And that leads us to the main event. That's really what this pay-per-view is all about. I wouldn't call this a one-match show. That's not true. It's not fair to the other people on the show. It's a one-match show in terms of, I think, nobody would disagree that the main attraction, the main allure, the main reason this pay-per-view, if it does better than a typical B-show pay-per-view, nobody will deny the fact that the reason is because of the main event. You have CM Punk, the challenger, in his hometown of Chicago, on the last night of his contract, fighting for the championship, threatening to take the title and leave, playing off themes of Montreal back in 1997, without actually coming out and mentioning the Montreal Screwjob, which I thought was interesting. I mean, maybe I missed it at some point, but at no point on commentary, at no point during Vince McMahon's promo was the name Bret Hart mentioned. They alluded to a Montreal-type situation where Vince did not want somebody taking his title to another wrestling organization. But never once did they actually mention Montreal. They didn't, maybe in the final promo package when they show the video before the match on Sunday, they'll splice in some footage really quickly of Bret Hart at the Survivor Series in 97 just to kind of drive the point home. But that's certainly what they've been playing off of. They want people to think that this guy is going to win the belt, take it, he's going to go to New Japan, or he's going to go to Ring of Honor, he's going to go to TNA. Even though they never once mentioned the initials TNA. I don't even think TNA exists anymore. I think it's Impact Wrestling now. But whatever the case may be, they've done a masterful job of building this match. After Punk's promo a couple of weeks back that had everybody talking, they unfortunately went on this international tour July 4th. It was just bad, bad timing. And they had a tape show. It was taped on the same night. So it kind of took some of the edge off, and a lot of people who really had convinced themselves that it was a shoot saw that and realized that it wasn't. But you know what? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because this goes to a bigger point. And the point is this. Even if they beat you over the head with the fact that this is a pro wrestling storyline, this is an angle, if it is done properly, it doesn't matter. You can still believe in it. You can still invest in it. You can still watch that and sit on the edge of your seat and pay attention to every single aspect of it and love it. You know, when Punk came out for that segment with Vince McMahon on Monday night, of course it was part of a wrestling storyline. Who in their right fucking mind would believe, in their head and in their heart, after the promo that Punk cut 2 weeks earlier, that Vince McMahon would allow him to come back on his show with a live microphone? So again, you understand it's a pro wrestling storyline. You suspend your disbelief. This is what pro wrestling is all about right here. I mean, this is, to me, the best type of angle. It's the best type of storyline. Punk is one of those polarizing characters. You know, he's a heel, but really, in a way, he's been talking and behaving like a babyface. If you think about it, it's very Steve Austin-like in that early on, you know, with Austin, he was a heel. He had no intention of turning babyface. The fans essentially turned him babyface. And for a while, you know, Austin wasn't doing anything to appeal to the fans. He wasn't trying to act like a babyface. He was doing the same things he always did. He went out there, he cursed people out, he flipped them off, he beat the shit out of everybody, drank beer, went to the back. Now, over time, Austin, you know, he became the ultimate babyface, and, you know, he started catering more to the audience and all that. But Punk is kind of in a similar situation right now. He's not coming out and acting like a babyface, but he's saying all the right things, talking about ice cream bars, and he's talking about doing the right thing, and firing people that didn't deserve to be fired. These are not things that a heel would typically talk about. So it's an interesting character. I think that's why people have really invested in this emotionally. They love it. They love the shit out of this because it's so out of the ordinary. It's so unlike anything you would see in 2011 on WWE television that I fully expect that when this angle is over, we're just going to go right back to the way things were. It's like the TNA syndrome. You know, when they did the Kurt Angle Samoa Joe thing a couple of years ago, and they almost made that match out like an MMA fight. They really built it up as like a real fight between these two great wrestlers, these two great shooters. And it was a cage match at Lockdown, and they had a great match, and it was wrestled very differently. And I think that was I think to this day, probably the biggest business TNA ever did on pay-per-view. I think that show did something like 60,000 buys or maybe more. Whereas a typical TNA show now will do somewhere in the 7,000 to 10,000 pay-per-view buy range. They did that Hardcore Justice thing last year. It was a unique show. All the ECW guys, it did 20,000 buys. But that show did 60. And you would think, wow, you know, use it as an experiment. Experiment worked. We should do this more often. But nope. They went right back to doing things the way they always did. And now you see where Samoa Joe is in TNA, and it's just a fucking joke. And I mean, the guy responsible, actually, for helping put that whole match together and the guy responsible, really, for the whole idea behind how that Angle Joe match was built up was Dutch Mantel, and he got fired by TNA a few years back. So, again, I bring that up because in WWE, they tend to do the same thing. Just because they stumble upon something that works, that's different, that people really like, doesn't mean they're going to do it again. And it always puzzles me why. You know, they come out there, and Vince McMahon likes to talk about giving the fans what they want. This is going to be a real test for Vince McMahon and WWE, even if Punk leaves. And if Punk leaves, that sucks, because Punk has got more momentum now than at any point in his career. And if I'm CM Punk, and I've got this type of momentum behind me, I work for the biggest company in the world, I've got Vince McMahon in real life, I've got this guy by the balls. He does not want to lose me. They need big stars right now. The last thing WWE wants to do is lose CM Punk. And if Vince agrees to some of his demands, if he's going to get more money, if he'll get some time off, if maybe they'll hire a Colt Cabana back or a Luke Gallows back, I understand Punk is burned out. He wants to sit on his couch and do nothing for 3 months and then reevaluate what he wants to do. But goddamn, I mean, these are extenuating circumstances here. And if I'm CM Punk, I look at the situation and I say, I can't leave now. I own this place. But ultimately, the decision is up to him. So the question is, what happens here? How do you handle this? Do you have John Cena just beat him clean? You know, attitude adjustment, STF, 1, 2, 3, that's it? To me, that would be the worst possible outcome that you could do. But at the same time, you don't want to overthink it. You don't want to overbook this. You don't want to have a whole bunch of interference, and then Punk wins, and then somebody else wins the belt, and then Cena gets the belt back. And then you don't want to do that either. So how do you handle this? You're going to be in Chicago. Punk is coming in there. He's going to get cheered. He's going to be the babyface. Cena's going to come out, and he's going to get roasted. That we already know. So if nothing else, it's going to make for a really special atmosphere. This match really could feel like a WrestleMania-style main event. You know, John Cena made that comment, I don't know if it was on TV or in another interview a couple of days ago, but, you know, it's actually really true if you think about it. You know, you think about the WrestleMania main event this year. Okay, WrestleMania was, where was WrestleMania? Atlanta, the Georgia Dome. They had John Cena against The Miz. Now, you know, WrestleMania was built around The Rock. Everybody knew that The Rock at some point was going to come out there during that main event, and he did. But could you honestly sit there and tell me that the main event of WrestleMania 27, John Cena versus The Miz, had the sort of buzz around it that John Cena versus CM Punk has at Money in the Bank? There's no comparison. I mean, this match has reached a completely different plateau. So this really has a WrestleMania-style feel to it. And even if Punk is leaving, and he's not even going to be on Raw the next night, you could still be creative with this. So the way I would do it, I would not have Cena beat Punk clean, obviously. I wouldn't even have Cena beat Punk at all. The way I would handle it, I would have Punk go over, have the Money in the Bank winner come out, and cash in. Personally, I just think that, as predictable as that also may be, that probably is what makes the most sense. And if Punk's leaving, even if it's just for a couple of months, you got to move on. If Del Rio is your guy, you got to build around Del Rio. Because if Punk is not on TV, he ain't gonna be doing you any good. So why push the guy if he's not going to be on TV? Another way you can go with this, and this is kind of interesting. You can have John Cena beat CM Punk. And you know what? I wouldn't even mind this so much if they do it the right way. I wouldn't have Cena just give him the attitude adjustment and beat the fucking guy. Have a nice back-and-forth 20-plus minute match. They can kick out of each other's finishers. Have everybody on the edge of their seat. You know, get the crowd chanting, "This is awesome," which they rarely, if ever, do during John Cena matches. But if anybody can get them to do it, it's CM Punk. And at the end of the day, Cena beats Punk. Hard-fought match. It'd be nice if they had some blood, although I don't think they'll go that far. Cena beats Punk. So Cena avoids the firing stipulation. We all know he's not going to be fired. Why make people care even less about stips by having Cena actually lose, having Punk leave, and then Cena not really being fired? Cena almost has to win this match. So Cena fulfills his obligation by making sure Punk does not leave with the belt, but the Money in the Bank winner comes out, cashes in, and beats Cena. Essentially, it's the same idea. Either the Money in the Bank winner beats Cena, or he beats Punk. But I think at the end of the day, again, predictable as it may be, that's the way to go. If Punk is leaving, really leaving, you cannot have him win the championship. I mean, you could. I mean, if I were booking, and I'll tell you what. If I were in charge, and I had CM Punk under contract, but I knew he was going to be leaving for a certain period of time after the pay-per-view, 2 months, 3 months, whatever it was, I would not rule out the idea of having him win and really just leave with the championship. So for a certain period of time on Raw, you have no champion. And Punk can tape these promos and send them in every couple of weeks. He's sitting at home with the belt on his couch, eating a bag of Doritos, stuff in his face, eating ice cream and pizza with the WWE Championship sitting right beside him. Work out a deal where you let Punk go to New Japan Pro Wrestling. Let Punk go to Ring of Honor. Of course, the thing with Ring of Honor is they have TV now. Their TV doesn't start until September, but if you could work something out and they allow Punk on their show, let's say, you know, ROH has another iPay-per-view coming up, let's say in August or whatever, let Punk go on the Ring of Honor show. Take actual footage from ROH, which WWE has already acknowledged on their TV, and air footage on Raw later next month of CM Punk at a Ring of Honor independent show with the WWE Championship. Try to milk this thing for all that it's worth. And a month or two later, CM Punk comes back. And when he comes back, maybe he brings some friends with him. Maybe Colt Cabana. Maybe the Kings of Wrestling. But the only reason I wouldn't do that is because you have SummerSlam coming up. And I just don't see how you can get away with having SummerSlam if you don't have a big main event match. Like, you don't have a guy like The Rock. You know, The Rock is not wrestling at SummerSlam. He's wrestling at WrestleMania. You don't have a main event like you did in 05 when they did 500,000 buys for SummerSlam because they had a Shawn Michaels versus Hulk Hogan match. It wasn't about championships, but it was a marquee match that sold a lot of pay-per-views. They don't have that now. You have to have a title match in the main event. So that's why I wouldn't do it. The timing is just, if Punk is leaving, you can't have Punk actually take the title and not have any title defenses on your TV for 2 months when you have SummerSlam coming up. So that's why I wouldn't do it. But hell, if I were in charge, if I were a booker, yeah, be creative, have some fun with it. There's a million different ways they can go with it. It's actually kind of fun. Everybody's, you know, coming up with their own ideas and their own suggestions. Everyone's excited. And the only thing I worry about is that everyone is so excited, and they're coming up with all of these fantastic ideas. And again, the ones I presented are just a couple. I mean, there's even better ideas out there. Again, I would caution people, don't get your hopes up. More often than not, when it comes to these things, everybody gets their hopes up, and then the pay-per-view happens, and then the event is over, and maybe it was a really good show, but people were really pissed off by the finish, and then they just are completely depressed. So I am going to give up as far as trying to figure out exactly what they're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do. I am excited to find out, just like you are. But again, if I had to make a prediction as far as who walks out with the title, Punk ain't walking out with the title, and I don't think Cena is either. And who that person is remains to be seen. Maybe it's Del Rio. Maybe it's not. We'll wait and see. But the one thing I will say is I had no intention of ordering Money in the Bank. You know, these pay-per-views are very expensive. It's not a matter of that I didn't think it was going to be a good show, but I, like a lot of people, have to be very cautious with how I invest my money. And there's so many pay-per-views and so many shows that are good and aren't good, you know, it's unlikely that very many people are going to order every single WWE pay-per-view these days. It's obviously very unlikely. If you look at the numbers, people are buying these pay-per-views a lot less than they used to be. And I am one of those people, but they have done such a great job. They have convinced me, even though I won't even be home for the show. I think I mentioned that before. I actually have to work. There's a charity function for work. I have to attend. And I expect to be back in time for the main event. I seriously doubt I'm going to miss the main event. But I was kind of looking forward to the whole show, actually. So I'm kind of bummed that I've got to watch the main event first, and then I'm going to have to go back and watch everything, and I'm going to have to stay off the internet and not get spoiled and all that. But, you know, that's what you got to do. Of course, I would have to work on this particular Sunday night. It's funny how those things work out. Very rarely do I get any of these B-show pay-per-views, and the one time I have to, not going to be around. But anyway, Money in the Bank. If you watch the show, obviously, send in your feedback. I'm sure there's going to be a flurry of activity on Facebook. So if you're not a Facebook friend, you must get on there now. We've got a lot of people who post on that page. It's a nice little community that we got. If I remember, I tend to forget these things. But if I remember, I will try to get a thread up on Facebook. And if I do, I would appreciate it if you can keep the pay-per-view comments limited to that one thread. Because there's a lot of interest in this show. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of activity on Facebook this Sunday. So get on there. Facebook.com/TheSolemnMonster. You can follow me on Twitter, Twitter.com/TheSolemnMonster. Any sort of updates on Sunday leading up to the pay-per-view on Punk, any breaking news, obviously SE Scoops is your source, but get me on Twitter and Facebook if you're not on there, because any updates like that, I'll be sure to get on there as well. All right, so I just want to go through a quick good, bad, and ugly review of Raw from last Monday, even though I kind of went over all the important stuff with the pay-per-view preview. It was another pretty good show. A lot happened. Obviously, a lot of good stuff with Punk on the microphone, with Vince McMahon, even John Cena. I liked the show. There was good, there was bad, there was some not so good. First, the good stuff. Obviously, Punk's opening promo last Monday was fantastic. You don't need me to tell you that. I thought, you know, especially bringing out Jimmy Hart's old megaphone. I know it wasn't his, but, you know, the gimmick. And he did that in the event they tried to cut his mic, which, coincidentally, they did not cut his microphone. Thing about Punk that I like, I appreciate that he goes the extra mile to have things make sense and to close little loopholes like that. You know, it's like when he brought attention to the bullshit stipulation where John Cena was fired last year. You know, he mentioned that also on the show and how BS that was. Because Cena never left. He never missed even one Raw show. So I appreciate that when Punk brings stuff up like that. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind it was Punk's idea to make sure that these things were brought up, you know, and put into the script. So I appreciate that. One of the key lines of the promo, by the way, was Punk talking about how he has made WWE relevant again in the mainstream media, because typically you only hear about WWE when somebody dies. And I was amazed they let him get away with saying that. You know, Randy Savage died recently. I guess in their mind that's kind of what they were thinking. Savage's death got a lot of attention. But, you know, WWE also gets a lot of attention more often than not when wrestlers die for things other than just having a random heart attack. And for that reason, I was very surprised, actually, that they would allow him to bring that up. But, you know, if you really stop and think about it, aside from the occasional celebrity participation in their shows, it really is true. I mean, when else does WWE get mainstream media attention? So, Punk talked about getting a new title belt after Money in the Bank, because the current design sucks. So that alone is reason to hope that CM Punk does leave Chicago with the championship. He said that if Vince McMahon would have treated him well 5 years ago when he came in, none of this would be happening. He said later in the night, We would see the first ever live public contract negotiation on TV, and perhaps Vince McMahon himself would even become a card-carrying member of the CM Punk Kiss My Ass Club. Thankfully, we didn't see any bare asses on this show. That's a plus. So John Cena comes out and nearly ruined what was an otherwise flawless segment up to that point. Now, I say that because you immediately expect Cena to come out like a kid at recess. Think about it. Anytime John Cena comes out for a match, he comes out like a kid busting out of a school at recess. Throws his hands in the air. You know, he looks like a retarded clown. So, he's got this big cheesy grin on his face. Breaks into some bad comedy. But, not tonight. He came out. He looked very serious, very stern. He walked right to the ring. He cut one of the better John Cena promos that you're ever going to hear. And my only question is, why can't he do this more often? A big reason why this match feels so special is because they've given us a reason to take it seriously. Normally, Cena plays everything up to be a joke. You know, to him, nothing matters. He could lose the championship, and this has happened before. He could lose the championship, come out on TV the next night, and be smiling as though nothing happened. Because to him, I won the title 10 times before, I'll win it back, no big deal. But I appreciate that this time they're actually taking it seriously. So, one thing I got to mention here, Patrick on our Facebook page, want to give him some credit here because he raised this very same point on Tuesday. He was the first person. Since then, a lot of people have emailed me to talk about this. I noticed it myself watching the show. It was very apparent on Raw that John Cena was playing up a Boston accent. He did it in the opening segment and the closing segment. I thought maybe I was just imagining things here. But then when I went online, I saw Patrick and then slowly but surely other people. Hey, Solomon, so was it just me or did Cena sound like he was trying to play up a Boston accent? Nope, he was. Go back and listen. It wasn't uniform throughout the entire promo, but he was definitely playing it up more than he ever does. And I understand they're in Boston, but come on. As Chris Jericho would say, what shameless pandering on the part of our champion here. Alex Riley, Kofi Kingston, Evan Bourne beat R-Truth, Miz, and Jack Swagger in a six-man tag. Rey Mysterio was not on the show, and Alberto Del Rio drove out in a limo, or whatever the fuck it was that he came out in. So they were out of the match, but pretty good match. You know, Riley pinned Swagger with an implant DDT at the end. The crowd really didn't give a shit, quite frankly, about Alex Riley, unless he was in there with the Miz. I don't know what that means, but they were silent whenever Riley was going crazy on somebody else. When he went after Miz, they actually got kind of excited. I think that says more about how over Miz still is, even though they've beaten him down a lot, than it does about how over Alex Riley is. But, you know, maybe it was just the crowd in Boston. I don't know. I guess we'll find out on Sunday what kind of reaction Riley gets in Money in the Bank. I said earlier already about the video package, Mark Henry and Big Show. It was really well done, and I'm sure probably better than the match they're going to have at the pay-per-view. Although, you know what? I shouldn't even say that. Maybe they'll surprise us. You know, if Mark Henry could have a good match on TV with Kane, he could probably have a pretty good match with Big Show. I have faith. I have optimism that this will actually not be so atrocious. But there is no denying that they did a really good job of making Mark Henry out to be a total monster. We get the final segment of the show in the good category. Obviously, really good stuff. And it may have been the best go-home angle, quite frankly, for a WWE pay-per-view main event since Team WWE faced off with the Nexus almost a year ago before SummerSlam. Remember that last show before SummerSlam? I think it was the last show. You know, there was a tag team, I think handicap match. It was going to be John Cena and Bret Hart against the Nexus. And I guess I think they did have a match. Bret obviously didn't take any bumps. And then, you know, all the Nexus is out there outnumbering Cena and Bret Hart. And then I think R-Truth was in the match, so he came out to help, and then John Morrison came out. And as the heels, Chris Jericho and Edge were not going to help. But then they decided to unite with their fellow WWE counterparts. And you had that awesome scene in the ring. You had seven WWE guys face-to-face with seven Nexus guys about to lock horns and beat the crap out of each other. And the crowd is going nuts. And the thing I remember about that was the building was shaking. You could tell because the camera was shaking. That's how loud those people were. And then they just came together, and it was a big brawl, and it was really, really well done. And I think this may have been the best go-home segment to a pay-per-view since that Raw last year. I really do. Vince McMahon was, by the way, in fact, not looking at the Zack Ryder sign as he came down to the ring for the main event segment. I thought he was. You know, when Vince went walking by, it was a guy with a Zack Ryder sign. I thought that that's what he was looking at. And I went back and I watched it again, and what Vince was actually looking at and kind of being dismissive of was a guy dressed up as Hulk Hogan. So he was actually looking at the Hogan impersonator. So, in fact, in spite of what Zack Ryder said on his Twitter after the show when he tweeted that Vince McMahon knows who I am, I still don't think Vince does. So Vince is in the ring, and he's asking, he wants to know what CM stands for. And for the record, in an interview that Punk did a couple of years ago, he said that CM stood for Cookie Monster because it was a nickname his mother gave him as a kid because apparently he was really chubby. And I've also heard it as Chicago Made and Chick Magnet and Charles Manson, because, you know, Punk wore a Charles Manson shirt. It really angered a lot of people on Raw. He did one time when he was a commentator late last year. He wore a Charles Manson shirt. So anyway, CM means whatever the fuck you want it to mean. That's the moral of that story. Huge pop for the WWE ice cream bars. You know, Punk is bringing up his list of demands. He brings up the ice cream bars. He wants them back. And he says, see, I just made you $1 million in ice cream bars, because the crowd went apeshit when he first mentioned them. And I got a couple of emails from listeners to the show, but in fairness, my brother was the first person who actually sent me this email. I'm going to read it, actually. I'm sure many of you have gotten the same email. But he sent a request in to Good Humor. The Good Humor company is the company that marketed those WWF ice cream bars back in the day. So my brother, like many other people, went and sent a request into their contact us form on their website and got this response. Hello, blank. Thank you for writing us regarding the WWE popsicle ice cream bars. While we at Good Humor Ice Cream enjoy a good figure four leg lock, haha, and are sure glad you enjoyed the product, we do not have plans to make a superstar ice cream bar at this time. So, the moral of the story is, as CM Punk said on his own Twitter page, apparently, Good Humor does not want to make money. So, anyway, and I don't know what their relationship is with WWE, if you know, there was some sort of issue, and that's why they stopped doing them. Maybe they don't care much for the product. You know, of all the things to bring to Good Humor's attention, this angle is not one of them. This is the edgiest angle, the closest thing to a non-PG angle, although it still is PG. They've done nothing that's not PG, but they're pushing the boundaries as much as they can with this angle. And so now you have the Good Humor company out there probably watching Vince McMahon on television calling CM Punk a son of a bitch, and I could see where they may not want to get right back in bed with WWE. But anyway, to the people who emailed me saying, oh, I can't tell you, there were a couple people who emailed me saying they had an exclusive for the Sound Off and for Essie Scoops. And I didn't have the heart to tell them that the response they got from Good Humor was the same exact stock response to any wrestling inquiry they got from anybody. They mentioned the figure four leg lock and that they don't have any plans to market them. And they sent that same email to everybody. I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but I'd like to see them come back. I can't eat them. I can no longer have ice cream, but, you know, hey, they were good. Whew. And let's be honest here. Who wouldn't want to eat Kelly Kelly? Anyway, Vince McMahon, he was referring to Punk as Phil, which of course is CM Punk's real name, I guess, to make it feel real. So that was kind of cool. Punk said that he wanted his face on collector's cups, the Titantron, the turnbuckles. He wanted his own private jet. He wanted his own movie, the CM Punk story. It could be The Chaperone 2, only it would be funnier and more successful. If I didn't know any better, I'd say they were building to a CM Punk Triple H feud at some point. Punk mentioned Colt Cabana. He mentioned Luke Gallows. For the record, by the way, an item I read in the latest Wrestling Observer newsletter. Apparently, Colt Cabana has told at least one indie promotion that he has worked with that he is no longer taking dates with them after August. And he also did not sign a contract with Ring of Honor. Because, again, Sinclair Broadcast Group bought Ring of Honor, 100% of the promotion. They own it now. And they've got TV starting in late September, and at the iPay-per-view show late last month in New York City. Great Ring of Honor show, by the way, if you didn't see it. All the Sinclair people wanted the Ring of Honor guys to sign contracts if they had not already done so by that night. And Supposedly, there are still a few people who have not signed contracts. I think the Ring of Honor champion, actually, Davey Richards, I don't believe has signed a contract. Colt Cabana has not either. So he is not under contract. I thought he was, but he is not. And apparently Cabana, Chris Hero, and Claudio Castagnoli, in addition to Davey Richards, are the only main wrestlers who have not signed new ROH deals. And Hero and Claudio, I mentioned, they had those tryouts a couple of weeks back with WWE. And apparently they are in the middle of going through the procedure that wrestlers go through before they sign their contracts of taking the medicals, the physical, you know, all that stuff, having their backgrounds checked. So it looks like Hero and Claudio are WWE bound. And I have not heard definitively that Colt Cabana is coming back, but the fact that he's telling certain indie promotions, don't book me after next month, and that he is not under contract to Ring of Honor, just saying, makes the story, I think, a little more interesting. As far as Luke Gallows, it's interesting he mentioned Luke. I know the two of them became really good friends. Luke, of course, was the former Festus. They were in the Straight Edge Society together. And Punk was saying that he is the voice of the voiceless, because these are two guys, two of his friends who were fired. If Colt Cabana does come back to WWE, I don't know that we'll see the same thing with Luke Gallows, only because I have read that whatever may have happened, his departure from the company, there was more to it than meets the eye, is all I know. Something may have happened. It wasn't just that, you know, they wanted to cut the fat, he wasn't being used, and so they got rid of him. Apparently there was a reason that they got rid of Luke Gallows, so I don't know that we'll be seeing him back on TV so soon. So anyway, Vince McMahon said that they all deserve to be fired, and Punk called him out about not knowing what makes a superstar in 2011. He said Vince McMahon is out of touch. He actually said this. That may have been the biggest shoot comment I heard this entire interview. So Vince said he doesn't much care for what the fans want. Punk said that's exactly the point. Vince doesn't care, and Punk cares too much. Another shoot comment. So anyway, unlike earlier in the opening segment, when Cena came out to interrupt this thing here, you know, he cut earlier in the night a good, serious, believable promo. Here, this fucker comes out, and he starts with the fucking comedy. I was ready to throw my remote through the television screen, because I could just see where this was going. And he's talking about Vince and Punk babbling back and forth, and I just wanted to wring his neck, because we were in the middle of a fantastic, believable, just real segment, and this stupid son of a bitch comes out and starts with the goofy comedy again. But thankfully, Punk turned it around on him and got things back on track. And Cena was a little more serious after that. Punk made reference to Cena's dad, his girlfriend in the front row, compared him to the New York Yankees, which I guess was too much, you know? It kind of reminded me of interaction with Terry Funk and Mick Foley. If you remember, before the one-night stand pay-per-view in 2006, when Foley went heel, remember him and Edge were the co-hardcore champions, and there was this great promo on Raw before that pay-per-view. It was with Foley and Funk, and Funk was insulting Foley. He was like, hey, Foley, you know, your wife is this and your kids are that, and nothing he said could get Foley to punch him. Like, he was trying to really get under Mick's skin. And the last comment that Terry Funk made was, he said that, and I'll try to do the Terry Funk voice here. He said, the WWE sucks. And that was too much. You could talk about his family, you could talk about anything you want to, but when he insulted the WWE, this great heel that Mick Foley was portraying at the time, it was too much. And he went after Terry Funk. And this kind of reminded me of that in a way, because Punk's out there saying a lot of wicked shit about John Cena. And, you know, in that first promo, in this promo, he's really saying things about Cena that you would think would get under Cena's skin. And Cena doesn't react physically. He doesn't react. But when he calls Cena, he compares him to the New York fucking Yankees. Well, that's just too much. And Cena hauls off and decks him right in the face. And anyway, Punk slid out of the ring, ripped up the contract, said, fuck you, I'm not signing. I'll go be the best in the world somewhere else, he said. And this was another fantastic ending to Raw. Hopefully not the last really good ending we're going to have if Punk does leave, but this was great stuff. And as far as the bad stuff, again, you know, I don't want to rag on John Cena too much, but I will. It's not even his fault. I mean, having him single-handedly beat the tag team champions, David Otunga and Michael McGillicuddy, Why? Why bother? Why do they insist on doing that? Having all the Money in the Bank participants, with the exception of Rey Mysterio, come out to their music to argue why they're going to win at the pay-per-view. Maybe if they did it differently. It always comes off so contrived. Two guys come out, they start arguing, the music plays. Another guy comes out. No, you guys are wrong, I'm going to win. Then the music. Now another guy. It's like, we've seen this formula over and over and over again. I mean, why not just splice in 8 separate taped backstage promos throughout the entire show, you know, with highlights of each guy in action, and then of them talking about why they think they're going to win? Just do it differently. That's all I ask. Anyway, it took about 2 months, but they finally managed, in my opinion, to turn R-Truth into a total comedy character. He's still very entertaining, don't get me wrong, and I understand that he had his shot and you know, he's not going to be in championship matches every week, but, I mean, who could possibly take this man seriously? I would say that R-Truth is very similar right now to Sting in TNA, in that I am highly entertained by both of them, and I like what they're doing, and it's good that they're doing something fresh with these guys, but R-Truth, whether he's being told to do this or he's doing it on his own, he's going way too over the top, to the point where I just cannot take him seriously at all. And Sting is clearly, I mean, look, he's ripping off the Joker from Batman. We know he is, all right? He got the same makeup on his face that Heath Ledger had. On Impact on Thursday, we've got guys in clown masks. I mean, they cannot possibly rip that movie off anymore, okay? I get that. It doesn't matter to me. I actually think what Sting is doing is cool. I find Sting interesting, really interesting, for the first time in years. But I'm watching Sting the last 2 weeks on Impact with just the things he's saying and his expressions. He's taking it, I think, a little too over the top. There's a certain way you could do that character, and it could come off as like really unnerving, I think, and scary and frightening and intimidating. And Sting, I fear, is taking it to a level where, also, it's going to be very hard to take him seriously if he doesn't dial it back a little bit. So I just wanted to draw that comparison there, because I think that the two of them have those similarities in common. But anyway, I mean, with R-Truth, so his gimmick now is that he mispronounces words? I mean, is that his new gimmick? Why? I mean, because he's from the ghetto? I don't get that. Big Show, I guess he went to a double countout with Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler on the show. I don't know, because I don't think they ever made any sort of announcement, unless I missed it. But it doesn't matter. It was all a backdrop to an angle on this show. And Big Show was going to chokeslam Drew McIntyre off the Raw stage. And out of nowhere, like a bat out of hell, comes Mark Henry. Imagine this 400-pound gigantic monster of a man is running towards you. I would need a change of underwear if that were me. So he comes running out of nowhere, collides with Big Show, and these two giants go tumbling off the stage and onto a crash pad. Now, I'm putting this in the bad category this week because this looked so fake. It's so incredibly fake. I mean, if there's no safe way to do this, then just do something else. I don't want to see these guys get killed for real, but if you're going to do a stunt like this, at least make it look like a big deal. They didn't even fall that far. They just kind of fell. I'll tell you, the guy who I was worried about was Drew McIntyre. That poor fucker fell off the stage for real, and there was no crash pad. He fell down. He fell hard. There was a lot of concern at first because he wasn't supposed to fall off the stage. You know, Big Show picked him up, and the idea was that Mark Henry was going to come out, hit Big Show. Big Show would drop Drew on stage, and Henry and Show would go flying off. But instead, the momentum, I guess, carried Drew, and he really did fall. And he hit his head, and people were concerned, and they may send him for some impact testing to make sure he's not concussed. But that was, you know what? I mean, that was more scary than watching Big Show and Mark Henry fall. So anyway, that was not good. And then there's the ugly. And there's only one thing I'm going to put in this category before we move on here, but I have to mention this. I complained about it on Twitter. I know it's a nitpick. I don't give a fuck. Michael Cole has gotten into the disgustingly annoying habit of calling Jerry Lawler Jerry all the time instead of calling him King. Yeah, it's one of those things that I don't even think people realize. I noticed it because everybody, Jim Ross, Michael Cole for years, everybody just calls him King. Hey, King, King this, King that. And for whatever reason now, whether he was told to or he's doing it on his own, he calls him Jerry. He doesn't even, like, call him King sometimes now. It's just Jerry. And, yes, I understand his name really is Jerry. I do get that. And I have no problem with a Jerry here and a Jerry there. But a Jerry everywhere? Not gonna work. In the first hour of this show, Michael Cole must have said the word Jerry about 50 fucking times. And it got old after the fifth. I don't know why, but it just really got on my nerves, and I was ready to kill. It's a minor thing, I know, but it's in the ugly category because it's the only thing on the show that really pissed me off. Which is good. The fact that Michael Cole said something stupid is not really a surprise to anybody. If that's the only thing on the show that really pissed me off, then this was a really good show. But please, for the love of God, just call the guy Jerry and then call him King. Interchange the two words. Call him something else. Come up with a completely different name. Come up with a pet name for him. I don't give a shit. Just annoys me. So The Rock apparently cut a promo in the mountains this week, in case you didn't hear. Yep, The Rock has been on the receiving end of a lot of ill words from people lately. John Cena, CM Punk, Randy Orton. People seem like they really don't like The Rock. And, you know, real or storyline is irrelevant. The fact is, people are talking negatively about The Rock, and so he took the time to respond in an 11-minute video posting that made its way onto YouTube this week. And he cut loose, the likes of which we haven't seen The Rock do in a while. And I made the comment on Twitter after I watched the video, and people were very upset when I said this, that I watched The Rock video, and it looks like CM Punk is going to have to settle for second best mic work this week. And some people saw that and said, oh, are you kidding me? How could you say that? Blah, blah, blah. Let me explain why. We all know CM Punk is great. His promo 2 weeks ago was fantastic. Almost 3 weeks ago now. Fantastic stuff. And Punk's promo on Monday was probably easily the best thing all week, until I saw Rock's promo. The difference between the two is this. When I got done watching The Rock's video, more of what The Rock said, as far as John Cena is concerned, resonated with me. You know, when CM Punk goes out there and he talks about Cena being a kiss-ass, and then you see video of him in Australia complimenting Cena and talking about how this guy, he's a hard worker, which again is absolutely true. Nobody except maybe The Miz, in terms of like media work, does more right now in WWE than John Cena. He is the workhorse in that company. I have a lot of respect for him for that. And I think he takes a lot of shit unnecessarily from people when it comes to that stuff. I think he really likes his job. I think he genuinely enjoys it. He cares. Okay, all of that is true. But there was a comment that Rock made in all of those 11 minutes of his promo, right around the 7-minute mark. He said something that made me just clap and cheer because of how true it is. So I'm going to play that clip for you right now. It's about 30 seconds. This, to me, was the highlight of the entire Rock promo from YouTube.
You know why men boo you around the world, John? You know why men don't respect you, don't like you? You know why you're down in Australia? You're angry at the crowd because they were quiet during your match? You know why you go to your own hometown in Boston and they boo you? You know why? The Rock will tell you why. Because The Rock is a man. And The Rock represents a majority of men around the world. We don't like you. We don't respect you. Why? Because we, us men, see through bullshit. And we smell a phony punk a mile away.
Truer words have never been spoken. That one comment right there completely encapsulates everything that everybody... I cannot tell you how many people tweet and Facebook and email me bitching and bitching about John Cena. And the one constant is exactly what The Rock said. Because they think he's full of shit. When he comes out on TV every week, the John Cena character, when he opens his mouth, he's full of shit. He's laughing. He's cracking jokes. He does not give a fuck about anything. Like I said earlier, he could lose the championship. He could be beaten down by 7 members of Nexus. He'll be right back out there next week with the same stupid fucking grin and the same smile and the same corny jokes. And that's just the way he's booked to some degree. I can't even lay all the blame on Vince and the writers and everybody because I refuse to believe that John Cena doesn't have enough clout backstage where if he got handed some stupid crap, he could crumple it up in a ball and throw it away. Okay, what are they going to do to him? They're going to curtain jerk on superstars? They're going to fire him? Of course not. So I do lay a lot of that blame on Cena. I think a lot of the backlash is undeserved, and a lot of it is very much deserved. And what Rock said really resonated with me. It's the reason why guys, for the most part, some guys like Cena. I know there's a lot of male John Cena fans out there. But the fact is, when he goes out there, the boos you hear are coming from the guys. They're not coming from the girls. They're not coming from the kids. They're coming from the guys. And The Rock, he wrapped the package perfectly right there. Everything he said in those 30 seconds and beyond is 100% true. You know, in terms of the storylines and the Cena character, what Rock said, 100% true. And it was great to hear that mentioned in this type of form. I just thought it was great. And the passion in The Rock that, you know, that Rock showed in that promo was great. Because, you know, again, I'm tired of hearing people bash The Rock also. I talked about this last week. I'm not going to rant on it again. A lot of it is jealousy. In fact, most of it is jealousy. And you heard years ago the heat between Triple H and The Rock, and I don't know how much of that heat still exists. I think they're on pretty good terms right now. But a lot of that was professional jealousy. You know, Triple H was upset. He thought he was next in line. He should have been champion a lot sooner than he was. And here's this guy, The Rock, who came into the company and got pushed, became champion in 98. Triple H didn't win the title until the summer of 99. And then when Austin went down with an injury, it was really The Rock and Triple H show in WWF for most of 2000. And there was a lot of politicking going on back then. And then Rock started getting movie opportunities. Triple H, I remember reading lots of stories about how he was trying to break into Hollywood and couldn't get meetings, and there was a lot of professional jealousy there between those two guys. And I don't think it's all that much different now. You know, Rock has been immensely successful in Hollywood. He's made millions and millions of dollars. I mean, the guy is set for life. He lives like a fucking rock star. And I don't mean that he parties hard and stuff. I just mean he's doing what he loves to do. He makes movies, successful movies. He goes home. He's got a big house. He gets to work out at the gym. He gets to go out to these places all over the world and promote his films. You know, he was just in Rio a couple months ago promoting Fast Five. He can come back on Raw every now and then. He doesn't have to go on the road. He doesn't have to take the bumps. Well, you know what? Guess what? Rock already did that. He took bumps. He traveled the world just like those guys did. But it's professional jealousy. It's professional resentment. And I think a lot of it, they're starting to incorporate it into the storyline. In my heart, I believe that there are a lot of people back there. Randy Orton is probably one of them who believes a lot of what he said. I don't think Randy Orton, when he makes those comments about The Rock like he did on that radio interview, and he's made them before, even before WrestleMania, about how Cena's much better on promos than The Rock, and The Rock this and The Rock that. I believe a guy like Orton actually believes that. I don't think that's made up. I think that that's how he feels. And he's entitled to his opinion. But it was nice to see The Rock say, fuck this, I'm going to record this video, fuck the haters, let's lay it all on the line. I didn't hear one thing The Rock said that made me shake my head and say, yeah, you know what, the guy is wrong. You know, when The Rock responds to this whole notion that he said he was going to come back, he was back for good, and then he doesn't show up on TV, I don't think anybody in their right mind thought that when The Rock said that, that meant he was going to be on TV every single week, that he was going to be wrestling matches on pay-per-view every single month. You'd have to be a real fucking idiot to have honestly believed that. Now, could The Rock show up a little more often? Sure he could. But you don't want The Rock to show up too much, because then he's not going to be as special. You know, The Rock in this video teased making an appearance at Survivor Series. And I think I mentioned this a while back on the show. I don't remember if I predicted that it would be at Survivor Series, or I just hoped it would be, because then maybe I could buy a ticket and go. And it sounds like that's what they're teasing. It sounds like Madison Square Garden in November at the Survivor Series, The Rock may show up. He has threatened to show up. He has threatened to kick Cena's ass. And I think that's the perfect time to have Rock come back and start building some real interest in this match. Because before long, WrestleMania is going to be knocking on the door. And November is right around that time where you start trying to get things going for WrestleMania. You know, when Shawn Michaels challenged The Undertaker to a rematch for what would be Michaels' final match, that was at the Slammies in early December. So they already had an idea at that point of where they were going for WrestleMania, and they built the match, and they built it, and they built it, and they built it over the course of about 4 or 5 months. So Survivor Series sounds about right. Have The Rock show up. I don't know if I would necessarily have him and Cena go at it. Maybe he comes face-to-face with Cena in the ring, big promo. They come to blows almost, but they get separated by referees. You know, however they want to handle it. But, and again, Rock never mentioned Survivor Series by name. He kind of alluded to, you know, coming to meet Cena at the place where it all started for him, which was Survivor Series. You know, 1996, MSG, it was Rock's debut on TV in the ring as Rocky Maivia. He won in his match. He was, I think, the sole survivor for his team. So, and actually, 1996, that would be 15 years. Perfect. 15 years later, The Rock comes back to where it all started. MSG gets a king's welcome. Beats the crap out of John Cena. I could see that happening. So anyway, Rock takes honors for the week. Punk is great. Everything Punk touches of late turns to gold. I said, you know, the GQ interview was really great, and Punk is the reason everybody is talking right now. Make no mistake, you couldn't just plug anybody in there and do that. You know, good luck trying to plug in like John Morrison to do the same thing. Even The Miz, you know, as great as The Miz is on the mic, even The Miz is no CM Punk, and I give Punk a lot of credit, but if I had to give the edge to somebody, Rock's promo gets the edge. So let's switch gears here. As I mentioned earlier, second week in a row, I was able to watch Impact Wrestling on Spike TV. And this week was a big show coming off the Destination X pay-per-view, although this show didn't really have anything to do with Destination X. Destination X was all about the X Division, and it was a very good show. But this show was about Sting and Mr. Anderson for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. And, of course, as you know by now, Sting is, in fact, the new TNA champion. I don't know how many reigns that is for him. That's got to be, what, title number 5, 6, something like that? And again, I'm digging Sting right now. I just fear that he's taking his act a little too over the top. But thanks to a couple of killer clowns, Sting is the new champion. And they did some stuff earlier in the show where Immortal came out and tuxedos, and there was a poker table in the ring, and Sting was sitting at the poker table. And I always wonder in segments like this, you know, you have all these guys from Immortal in the ring. Hogan is there, Bully Ray, Bischoff, Abyss, Gunner, Scott Steiner. Got all these guys in there. And here's Sting by himself sitting down. Why not just beat the fuck out of him? Why does everybody just stand there? It's like this unwritten code. Well, we can't touch him. We have to let him finish his promo first. No, just go over and beat the piss out of the guy. But nope, they let Sting talk and talk and talk and talk. And then, of course, the lights went out. The lights came back on, and Sting was gone. So they missed out on their opportunity. This would come back to bite them in the ass later in the show, because Sting and his killer clowns basically were picking off different members of Immortal. And Jeff Jarrett, I think, got abducted and perhaps raped somewhere in a corner. I don't know. They didn't show it. But anyway, this all built to the end of the show. Sting won the championship. That's really all you need to know. This wasn't really a great show. I was not as impressed with Impact. You know, the title of the show last week in the podcast title, when I put it in there, I wrote Impact Impresses. And I would not use that as the title for this week. Impact actually looked kind of like the Impact of old to some degree, although there was still some good wrestling on the show. And one of the things I liked was the push of Austin Aries. Austin Aries won a TNA contract at the pay-per-view and made his official Impact Wrestling debut this week against Shannon Moore. But again, it was like a 3 or 4 minute match. Aries had to use a chain. He needed a weapon to beat Shannon fucking Moore. That's stupid. But nonetheless, it's good to see Aries getting a shot. I know Aries was really, really frustrated at WWE. He had auditioned for Tough Enough and was actually in the final roster of people that had initially been picked by, USA and Shed Media, which is the production company that really made Tough Enough. And then when Kevin Dunn in WWE got a hold of the list and they saw Austin Aries on there and a couple of these big indie guys, of course they said, oh, we can't have these people on the show. We have to change this. So they got Austin Aries booted off and some other guys. And Aries was teasing on his Twitter that maybe I'm done with wrestling. I can't catch a break, blah, blah, blah. And apparently he's getting another chance. So I give TNA credit for at least taking a chance on the guy. So we'll see what they end up doing with him. But this week, he won a match, so at least he didn't lose on his first night in. Tara beat Madison Rayne in a knockouts match that, again, I barely cared about. They did show this promo video for Bound for Glory. I will say this much. They are doing a good job of making Bound for Glory feel special. This whole Bound for Glory series that they have going on right now with the point system and everything. And their production team, which I think is led by David Sahadi, who worked for years with WWE putting together their video packages, really did a phenomenal job with the Bound for Glory commercial. It was really well done. And so far, without knowing what the actual card is going to be, there were rumors of maybe trying a Sting-Hulk Hogan match. I really hope they don't do that. But they've done to this point a good job of trying to make that pay-per-view feel special. The problem is that pay-per-view is not happening until October. So somehow they've got to get from July to October. And I was not impressed by this show. Let's just put it that way. Yeah, will there be a third straight week of Impact Wrestling for the Solid Monster? I don't know about that. We'll see. I mean, certainly if I'm around, I will give it a shot, but was not very enthusiastic about what I saw on this show. Some other TNA notes here to get to. Generation Me, the former Young Bucks, as they were known in Ring of Honor before they went to TNA, requested their releases and were granted releases from the company. So Generation Me is gone. I think they may already be back with ROH, as a matter of fact. I'm not 100% sure about that. They are gone, and Orlando Jordan is gone from TNA. He, I believe, did not request his release. He was simply cut. So he is gone from the company. He used to... I think his entry into the company had a lot to do with Hulk Hogan. Because I remember when Hogan had that Australia tour, the Hulkamania tour, where he was main eventing with Ric Flair every night. Orlando Jordan and Shannon Moore and the late Umaga, they were all on those shows. So I guess, you know, Hogan brought him along when Hogan and Bischoff came into the company. And, you know, he never... I will say this about Orlando Jordan. I saw him in person at the TNA House show a couple of weeks ago. He's a big dude. Like, he doesn't come off as being that big on television. I'm not saying he's 7 feet tall or anything, but he is a big dude. And he's not, like, a horrible wrestler, but, again, never really did it for me. You know, what was it about Orlando Jordan that really stands out and make you think, you know what, this guy could be a superstar? What makes Orlando Jordan so much better than a guy like Shelton Benjamin, who you could bring in? At least Benjamin has, you know, the athleticism to get himself over. And Jordan had, what, the bisexual gimmick. So he would pour milk on himself, and he would do this silly comedy bullshit with Eric Young. You know, it's one of those gimmicks to nowhere. You're not going to be able to really get very far with it. And I guess TNA felt they got as much out of it as they were going to get. They let him go, and I guess we'll see where he ends up. I don't think he'll end up back in WWE, but stranger things have happened. They did tell Trevor Murdoch that they were going to bring him back, and then they yanked their contract offer from the poor bastard at the last minute, so maybe they'll do the same thing with Orlando Jordan. Ric Flair, not on good terms with TNA. This news comes from the Wrestling Observer. I took an interest in this since this stems from the Brooklyn incident. So it's kind of interesting that this Brooklyn TNA house show that I went to has turned into such a shitstorm between Flair and the company. So there's a lot of tension between the two sides right now. And it really stems from the Brooklyn show. And I already ranted about this, the fact that Flair was there. He signed autographs during intermission in the... I don't even know where it was in the stadium. It certainly was not out in front of the rest of the audience. But he did that. He was asked to go out. He refused to go out and left before the show even ended. So an entire show that was advertised and built around the appearance by the Nature Boy Ric Flair, he went all the way to Brooklyn for the show and couldn't even make one quick appearance before the crowd. And anyway, Flair has not been booked for any TV since then. You may have noticed. He has not been on TV. Obviously, he was not going to be at Destination X. Was not on Impact Thursday either. So, the deal is this. Basically, at the Brooklyn show, D'Lo Brown was the agent, which I can verify because I actually saw D'Lo. So, I know D'Lo was there. I guess he was the agent in charge of running the show that night. And apparently he had some words with Ric Flair in the back. When Flair said that he wasn't going to go out, D'Lo was telling him to. He asked him to go out. Flair refused. And there was an issue between the two of them. And it kind of just escalated badly from there and led to Flair leaving the show. Flair claims he didn't know that he was supposed to be performing in front of people that night. even though, again, he was the focal point of advertising for that show. And, you know, the issue with Flair is he gets paid a lot of money by TNA. And part of him not being on TV every week is if they go over a certain number of dates specified in his contract, they must pay him extra for it, supposedly in the range of $10,000 per appearance. So it's in TNA's best interest to use Ric Flair sparingly. You know, if they can come up with ways to use Flair that really take advantage of Flair's verbal skills or as a manager, whatever the case may be, you would think it would be prudent on TNA's part to come up with good, useful ways to take advantage of Ric Flair. Instead of just throwing him out there every single week so he can drink whatever the... What was that drink that they iced? Remember the beer? Beer Money kept having him drink Mike's Hard Lemonade, whatever the fuck it was. The point is, they may have gone over the number of dates with Flair. That may also have a lot to do with why he has not been on TV. But now the fact that there is heat between the two sides and they are unhappy with him has led to a lot of questioning and speculation about what sort of future Flair really has in the company. Anyway, the story is Flair had made plans months and months ago for a family vacation, I guess around the same time here, like early July. And Terry Taylor back in around April, when Terry Taylor was still with TNA, talked to Flair, talked him into working the shows, convinced him that, you know, he could bring his wife with him and it would be like a vacation to New York. And so that's why Flair agreed to it months ago. And I guess the driver who was supposed to take Flair from his hotel to the baseball stadium for the show that day, apparently he showed up about 4 hours late, and Flair left the building with his driver. Again, after doing the autograph session, they hightailed it out of there. And he was at the Asbury Park show in New Jersey the very next day. And in Brooklyn, while he got there late because his driver left him hanging at the hotel for a couple of hours, in Asbury Park, he ended up getting to the building about 6 hours early for a house show because he was told traffic would be really bad, so they left early, and instead they made it from New York to New Jersey in about an hour. So there's some karma in there for you right there. Got a ironic story of the week, I guess is the best way that I could title this thing here. I'm just going to read you the details here. Bronco Busick. If you don't know who that is the son of a former WWE superstar, Big Bully Busick. Now, I'm sure a lot of people listening to the show have no idea who Big Bully Busick is. And I barely know who he is. I mean, I know who he is, but he was only on television for, God, maybe a few months, if that, back around 1991 or so. And, yeah, it was this gimmick. He was on Superstars and Wrestling Challenge and maybe a couple of primetime wrestling shows. And I think he was managed by Harvey Whippleman at the time. And it was a gimmick that went nowhere. So if you don't know who Big Bully Busick is, do not fear. You are not alone. But he was in the WWF. And so that's how they refer... I love how they refer to him as, you know, he's the son of former WWF stars, though this guy were actually something big. Anyway, his son was arrested for the second time in a week, after a victim accused him of armed robbery. And he was actually arrested on the same exact charge a couple of days earlier. So, anyway, the victim identified Bully's son as the perpetrator that attacked him, beat him to the point that he needed medical attention, and stole an iPod and $70 in cash. The former WWF star posted $25,000 bond to get his son out of jail a couple of days later. And apparently he has now been dismissed by the West Virginia Mountaineers. I guess he was a football player. Not anymore. He's now being held on $250,000 bond. He faces up to 10 years in jail for each count of armed robbery. So, wow, what a shock. The son of Big Bully turns out to be a bully. How about that? Last item here. This comes from a tweet directly from Jim Ross's Twitter page. He says, I've been approached by a major national company about doing a weekly podcast. I'm thinking about doing it, and I can assure you that if, and that is a big if, I do a weekly podcast, they will not be of the 60 to 90 minute variety that some wrestling websites do at times. Sorry, but for me, that's just too long. Wow. How about that? And an indirect swipe at the sound off from Jim Ross. Apparently, he does not like podcasts that go longer than 60 minutes. Ironically, neither do I. I know a lot of you don't feel that way, though. I have people email me who said they would be perfectly fine if the sound off were 3 hours every week. And to that, I say, you are nuts. I can promise you there will never be a weekly 3 hour sound off. But hey, if Jim Ross wants to come on the sound off, if he wants to call in and talk about why he dislikes long podcasts, and we can talk about other things as well. He certainly has an open invite to come on anytime he wants to. All right, let's break into the mailbag here. Got time for a couple of quick questions. It's come from Bill, one of our longtime listeners and advocate of the sound off from somewhere in the 50s. Again, I hope he doesn't mean the 1950s. It says, you mentioned in episode 167 how wrestlers cannot wait to leave WWE because, for whatever reason, they don't like the current direction. Which begs me to ask you the two-part question here that I have. Do you have more respect for the wrestlers who bite their tongue by serving the time out on the remainder of their contract, like a CM Punk, or for the wrestlers that take their career into their own hands, like a Chavo Guerrero or an MVP? Well, you could probably also lump in the Young Bucks of TNA fame into that category now, too. And I'll tell you what, I think I probably have more respect for the people who get out. Because at the end of the day, I don't think anybody, whatever you do for a living, whatever walk of life you come from, I feel that nobody should be miserable in their everyday life. If you are miserable, if you have a dead-end job, if you hate your boss, and a lot of people do. By the way, I just saw the movie Horrible Bosses. Great movie. But the point is, nobody should be miserable. And if you're miserable, it's up to you to do what you need to do to get out of that situation. You don't owe anybody anything. I mean, yes, you sign a contract. That's true. And WWE has made a lot of people very rich, including CM Punk. Vince McMahon made sure that he mentioned that in the promo on Monday night. He said, I have a contract here that's going to make you a very rich man. And then you'll notice he had a little subtle dig in there. He said, even richer than you already are. And then they kind of moved on. So that was a shoot. But I respect those people more. Chavo and MVP, they worked so hard their entire lives. They had an idea in their head that they wanted to be in the WWE. That was kind of the holy grail. If you're going to be a wrestler, you have a goal that one day that's where you're going to end up. CM Punk, as a 15-year-old kid, he knew he was going to be in WWE one day. And you make it, and you come to realize that it's not all that it's cracked up to be. Or it goes from being a dream to a nightmare and a heartbeat. Because, you know, you're in the doghouse, or you're not pushed, or you don't play politics the right way, or whatever the case may be. So if these guys are genuinely unhappy in their situation, I don't fault them at all for trying to get out of their contract. It's up to WWE if they don't want to let them out. If WWE does not want to allow an MVP, if he has 15 months left on his contract, if they don't want to allow him to leave, if they really don't want him to go, he's fucked. WWE can say, no, we're not going to let you go, or you can go sit at home and we'll pay you, but you can't go work anywhere else. You know, but in the case of a lot of these guys, they've given them the release that they've asked for. You know, Chavo claims that he asked for his release. MVP, I think, was the same thing. And there's been a couple of other instances as well. I think when Jillian Hall left, she later on claimed that she asked for her release, although I've heard otherwise. But whatever the case may be, I respect those people immensely. Because a lot of people wouldn't have the balls to do that. I'm not even sure that I would have the guts to do that. If I signed a contract with WWE to be a wrestler, to be an announcer, and I was making pretty good money, living the dream, and then for whatever reason, all of a sudden, I'm not happy anymore. I can't stand the travel. I can't stand some of the people maybe I work with behind the scenes, or I'm constantly getting ribbed or pushed down or talked down to, whatever the case may be. You know, I would hope that I would either voice my concerns, voice my displeasure, or I would just up and quit. But would I actually do it? You know what? I don't know that I would. So when a guy like an MVP or a Chavo or in TNA, if it's Generation Me, these two young kids who probably had the same thought in their head, wow, we're on national TV now. We're these two skinny Hardy Boy lookalikes who were in Ring of Honor and doing the thing on the independent scene, and now we're on Spike TV every week and we're wrestling on pay-per-views. They were unhappy with how they were being used. They probably weren't being paid a lot of money. That's the other big difference between WWE and TNA. It's probably a lot easier to walk away from TNA money than it is WWE money, judging by the way that company supposedly treats its talent, but that's a different story. But the point is, I respect those people a lot more, I think, than some other people would. And, you know, this guy like CM Punk fulfilling the remainder of his contract, agreeing to sign an extension so he can continue to compete through the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, because his actual contract expired weeks ago. He signed an extension so that he could wrestle through the 17th. I have a lot of respect for him, too. You know, he fulfilled his obligations, and I'll tell you what I have more respect CM Punk for. The fact that, as he said at his promo on Monday, his problem is he cares too much. And he has gone to bat backstage, not just on television with these promos, but in the back, he has gone to bat for his friends. He wants to see his friends succeed. He believes in his heart that a guy like Colt Cabana could be a really big deal. He is a really talented guy who has the same traits that WWE is looking for, and they just don't fucking see it, whatever the reason is. So he's always pitching Colt Cabana. Behind the scenes, on TV, in interviews. He was just on Colt's Art of Wrestling podcast again this week for a couple of minutes. Colt interviewed Chris Hero, and I think CM Punk is on for a couple of minutes as well. Whatever the case, I have a lot of respect for Punk for doing stuff like that. He goes out of his way to try to get other people a job with the company because he feels strongly that they deserve it. It's not just about him. It's not all about him. Some people are selfish. They don't give a fuck about anybody but themselves. Punk does not come off as being one of those guys. I respect him for it. But it's an interesting question. You know, I could even pose it to all of you at your respective jobs, or if you worked for WWE, if that's a goal of yours, whether you want to be a wrestler, a referee, an announcer, whatever the case, do you think that you would have the guts, if push came to shove, and you were unhappy working for WWE, or whatever you do in life, would you have the guts to quit your job? Even if you didn't have anything else lined up, and think about how the economy is, at least in this country. Do you think that when push comes to shove, you would have the guts to say, you know what? I quit. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not happy. And I bet I get a lot of different answers to that question, because I think some people would like to think they would have the guts, but they wouldn't. I may well fall into that category myself, but it's an interesting question. Anyway, the second part of Bill's question here, of all the wrestlers that petitioned to get out of their contract, which wrestler you can excuse or otherwise applaud them for leaving their contract? What were the circumstances? I'm sure if I took some time to really think about it, I can come up with a couple of different names. The one name that jumps out at me is Brock Lesnar. I can see both sides of the coin. On the one side, there were a lot of people in WWE who probably even to this day resent Brock Lesnar because he got so much so soon. Here's a guy who was physically a freak of nature, an NCAA collegiate wrestling champion who came in with this freakish physique, tremendous agility for a guy of his size. I mean, he could do things in that ring that a guy of his size should not be able to do. I mean, you watch him take a bump. He could take a bump from one side of the ring to the other. As a heel, Brock Lesnar was great when it came to doing that. He could take bumps for big guys, little guys, make his opponent look good, but he was also really good. You know, at the time when he got that first big push in WWE, my God, he was early 20s, maybe mid-20s. He was a young guy, but he got a lot too soon. You know, he became champion a couple of months after he made his debut on TV. The company put everything behind him. He had feuds with everybody from, you know, The Rock to The Big Show and The Undertaker and Kurt Angle and everybody in between. And then he just decided that he didn't want to do it anymore. You know, he tells the story, he probably tells the same story in his book, which I haven't read yet. Being in the locker room one day, this would have been late 03, maybe early 04, a couple months before he left the company. He was in the locker room, lacing up his boots, sitting down, and he just kind of looked up, and he looked around at the sad state of affairs in front of him. Guys that were in pain, they were, you know, just sitting there, icing themselves down, looking haggard and old and just beaten down. And these were guys that were still in the prime of their career. These were guys probably in their late 20s, early to mid-30s, late 30s. And Brock just had an epiphany. And he said, fuck, I don't want that to be me in 10 years. And Brock was already very beat up. A lot of people don't realize that that year that Brock and Big Show had their feud, and it was Lesnar, Heyman, and Big Show from like late 02 into a good portion of 2003. They were on the loops, all the house shows and all the TV tapings on SmackDown and everything. Heyman was taking bumps, too. You know, Heyman had to get in there and take the F5 every night from Brock Lesnar, and getting flung around like that by a guy like Brock Lesnar with reckless abandon probably wasn't too good of a feeling for Paul Heyman either. But Big Show 500-pound guy who was not used to being tossed around like that was getting thrown around like a rag doll by Brock Lesnar every single night. He was getting belly-to-back suplex, belly-to-belly suplex, F5'd. Brock was a freak, but Brock and Big Show were unbelievably beat up. I mean, they beat the shit out of each other. They became very good friends. But Lesnar probably felt like crap, saw everybody else looking like zombies walking around the locker room. And again, zombies because they were probably all pilled up on God knows what. This was before the wellness policy. And Brock said, I got to get out. It was a combination of that and the travel. Brock Lesnar makes no bones about the fact that he does not like traveling that much. And WWE, if you're a main event guy, to do that schedule, it's got to be a nightmare. He absolutely hated the travel schedule in WWE. So you take those two things together, and who can fault the guy for wanting to leave? He said, that's it, I'm out. You know, he did the job for Goldberg at WrestleMania 20, got stunned by Steve Austin, and that was it. And then WWE forced him, or coerced him, if he is to be believed, into signing this document. It was basically a 10-year, I think it was either 7 years or 10 years. I've heard conflicting things. Let's just say 7 years. A 7-year non-compete clause that prohibited him from wrestling from any other wrestling company, doing any sort of fighting, boxing, mixed martial arts, anything. The only thing that he was allowed to do was what he wanted to do. He had a dream to try out for the NFL. He wanted to be a football player. And he got a tryout. He went to the camp for the Minnesota Vikings, and it didn't work out. He tried, and it didn't work out. And you know what? For a guy like Brock, again, much respect. Here's a guy who said, I want to try this. He tried it. He failed. How many people would have had the guts to leave a lucrative career that he had as a top guy in WWE? Millions of dollars he left on the table. To go try to first become a football player at that age. Didn't work out for him, but you know what? He tried. He doesn't want to turn around 10 years, 15 years from now and say, shit, man, I wish I would have tried out. Maybe I would have made it. So he tried and it didn't work. You know what? Things worked out pretty well for him. Even though he's, you know, had the diverticulitis issues, he had pretty major surgery, and he's currently recovering. That's certainly no fun. But you know what? Brock went on to be the most successful wrestler to ever transit, professional wrestler, to ever transition over to mixed martial arts. He became UFC heavyweight champion. Made more money. He can make more money on one UFC fight than he could probably in WWE by having any pay-per-view match. Add up all the pay-per-view paydays all year long. Who could fault the guy? It's like Rock going to Hollywood. Who in their right mind could fault him for wanting to transition to something else where he can make a lot more money? And believe me, Rock makes a lot more money than he does when he was in WWE. So, again, I see both sides of the coin. Some people look at him as a turncoat. I understand that, but I think those people need to get over themselves. You know, you cannot force somebody to do something that they don't want to do. Brock took the deal. He signed the contract. He thought, this is my dream job. Guess what? Didn't turn out that way. So the guy wants to go do something else. Who are you to say that he's wrong for wanting that? Sam from Windsor, Ontario, Canada writes in, since WWE has a completely new heavyweight title stored somewhere, it would be fitting if Punk wins this Sunday, thus introducing the new title to the Raw brand a little later on, ridding us of that sad excuse of its current championship belt. I had a few ideas on how they could do this if Punk indeed does win Money in the Bank. Number one, say that Punk actually took the title and left the company with it and they need a new championship. Or number two, have Punk destroy the title at the end of the pay-per-view, light it on fire, sledgehammer it, whatever the case may be, rendering it useless. And for my last idea, have him win, leave the company, and come back a few months later with the title changed to a new version. Either way, I hope they change the title design. Maybe I'm getting my hopes up. What are your thoughts? Nope. I don't think you're alone in that. I think we've gotten, what has it been, 6-7 years now of that title belt design? It looks like a toy. You know, Hulk Hogan once called the WWF belt a trinket, like a Christmas ornament. This is the period where Hogan was actually the champion. Hogan beat Yokozuna at WrestleMania 9 and went over to in Japan to wrestle a match. So this would have been in the time period before WrestleMania and the King of the Ring in 93 when he lost the title and left the company. And there is or was video footage on YouTube. Hogan had a match. It might have been against Muda, although I could be wrong about that. In Japan, there was a press conference after the match. all the Japanese reporters. And the interesting thing about Hogan was that whenever Hogan was in Japan, his whole demeanor would change. You know, the type of matches he wrestled, they were more like real wrestling matches. You know, when he would cut the interviews that he would cut, it wasn't the, you know, Hulkamania, brother. It was a lot more subdued, a lot more tame, kind of like a real human being. And I'll never forget it. I'll never forget Hogan sitting there calling the title bell. He propped it up. You know, Jimmy Hart was helping him prop it up in front of the microphone stand as he sat at the table so all the media people could see it. And he referred to it as basically a Christmas ornament and said the belt that he wanted was the IWGP title. So hell of a way, by the way, for Hulk to put the belt over. But anyway, the point is that championship design has got to go. You know, even back in the day, believe me, that Winged Eagle belt did not look like a Christmas ornament. This title belt looks like a fucking Christmas ornament. And hopefully they'll introduce a new design, if not after the pay-per-view, hopefully soon. I first heard something about it last year, that they were preparing to introduce a new belt design, and it never happened. And I know that they make a lot of money off the current design, but, you know, again, it's been around for how many years? 6-7 years now? By introducing a new title design, you're selling a million more title belts. Lee from Manchester, England writes in, I would love if there was a If Cena Wins, We Riot sign at the pay-per-view on Sunday. Feels like RVD's Cena One Night Stand all over again. The crowd will make the event even more special. Hopefully it will not disappoint. I'm looking forward to this more than Royal Rumble or WrestleMania. It's unusual in a good way. So that comes from Lee. Russell from London, UK writes in, As far as I'm aware, it has always been the case that the heavyweight champion of a wrestling company would be at all the house shows. Essentially, they are bearing the bulk of the responsibility of selling tickets. Sting was TNA champion for the last 2 or 3 months. Do you know if he was present at all house shows? I'm guessing he was not. I'm a big fan of Sting and loving his Joker character, but isn't it misleading to have a champion who does not do house shows, if that is indeed the case? Misleading only if they promote Sting for the house show. It's kind of like the Ric Flair in Brooklyn deal where he was the focal point of the advertising, and for him not to show up is unconscionable. But if they're not advertising Sting, then it's not misleading. But yes, it is traditional. You would have your world champion like a John Cena. You know, John Cena does all the house shows. Randy Orton does all the house shows. It's a big deal, at least in WWE. And in TNA, it's just the nature of the beast. You know, they've signed some of these guys. Sting is one of those guys that, in his contract, he is not signed to do house shows. He will make an exception every now and then. There was a house show recently, I believe. It might have actually been the first baseball show that they did earlier this summer, not the Brooklyn show. He might have agreed to do that one. I don't remember which show it was. So he might be flexible, but by the letter of his contract, Sting does not do house shows. And I don't blame Sting for that. You know, Sting's 53 years old. He ain't no spring chicken. Physically, not 100%. And if I'm him, I don't want to go on the road either. You know, he's got a sweet deal where TNA or Spike TV or whoever it is paying him a lot of money. They keep renewing his contract year after year. And wouldn't you know, they just put their heavyweight title right back on Sting. And I will say this, having been to a TNA house show recently, with Mr. Anderson as the champion in the main event, even though the title was not on the line, I think by putting the title on Sting and taking it away from Mr. Anderson, even if Sting does not appear on house shows, you're not missing much. I was not impressed by Mr. Anderson's match with Kurt Angle a couple of weeks back, but you're right. You know, tradition is what it is. The champion should appear on house shows, and if you don't have your world champion, in theory, it affects ticket sales, and in the case of TNA, I don't think it's going to matter one way or the other. I mean, really, depending on what market, if Sting is the champion and TNA is hyping a main event of Sting versus Mr. Anderson or whoever, is it really going to move that many more tickets for TNA? I mean, in WWE, John Cena not being on the card is a difference maker. And again, it's one of the reasons why WWE is very resistant to turning him heel. It's not just the merchandise. He is a big draw at the house shows. I think in WWE it would make a difference. In TNA, I really don't think it makes much of one. Got a letter here from Matt. Dear Solomonster, how many times has Undertaker's orbital bone been broken? I remember reading something a year or two ago about Rey Mysterio breaking it when he did a 619 to The Undertaker. I also heard on your show that King Mabel broke it once. Are both of these stories accurate? Also, can you go into detail on how and when both of these injuries occurred? Well, before I answer that question, being that you brought The Undertaker up, I have to mention this. For those of you who have not seen this photograph, if you go onto my Facebook page, facebook.com/thesolomonster, friend me on there. Earlier today, I posted a photo that's floating around the internet of what appears to be The Undertaker. There's no indication of whether or not it actually is him. There's no indication of how recent or how old the photo might be. It certainly looks like him, and it certainly looks to be a more recent photo. He does not look young in this picture, and it's just a very odd-looking picture. It's certainly a newer look for him, and so if you're curious to see that and have not yet done so, friend me on Facebook, check it out, and there's a discussion thread going, over 50 comments and counting, although most of it is dribble and bullshit. I wish we would keep things on topic, but anyway, check that photo out. But as far as The Undertaker's orbital bone injury, both stories are accurate. I mean, I wouldn't have mentioned the King Mabel story if it was inaccurate, obviously. But yes, Rey Mysterio, it was an accident, obviously. I believe what happened is Rey wears that very heavy metal knee brace. And if I remember correctly, what happened is the knee brace caught Undertaker in the face. It probably was on a 619. It could have been another move. And I think the knee brace is what caused the injury. The King Mabel injury happened on an episode of Raw back in what would have been the fall of 1995. And if I remember correctly, there was like a gang assault, like a double team attack going on. And the Undertaker was laid out on the mat. And Mabel came off the ropes for what should have been a leg drop, if I remember correctly. And obviously, he landed on Undertaker's face with a lot more impact than he should have. And it was a legitimate injury. And you may recall that the Undertaker, he was probably out for a few weeks, but he came back, and for a couple of months, he was wearing this Phantom of the Opera looking ridiculous apparatus on his face, this weird looking phantom type mask. I mean, I guess, you know, as a young wrestling fan then compared to now, I thought it was kind of cool, but I also remember a lot of people thinking that's not the real Undertaker. You know, he's got the mask on, that can't be the real guy. Just like there's been two Ultimate Warriors, there's been four different Kanes, if people are to be believed. Sure. But he wore the mask, I think, for about 2 or 3 months. And the last time I saw The Undertaker wear that mask would have been in his championship match with Bret Hart at the Royal Rumble in 1996. They were in the main event. Undertaker had the match won. Diesel came out, yanked the referee out of the ring, cost Undertaker potentially the championship. That was when Diesel flipped off The Undertaker. He flipped him the bird on camera, which back in 1996 in WWF was a big deal. That was really, in my opinion, that's kind of when this whole era of attitude started. Really, in many ways, it was with Diesel's heel turn. You know, when he lost the title to Bret Hart at Survivor Series. And he kind of turned heel, but, you know, Kevin Nash on Raw in the next couple of months before he left to go to WCW, he was playing the cool heel that he played in WCW. And people were cheering him, some people were booing him, but anyway, in that match, the mask came off. Undertaker took the mask off, and I think by then the injury was probably already healed, and so that was the end of the mask. But it was definitely a real injury, and I've heard Paul Bearer even, Percy Pringle, in interviews in recent years, once or twice I think he was asked about it, and he acknowledged that it was a real injury. Undertaker was not very happy about it, obviously. Mabel getting a little sloppy there. And so, as far as I know, he only broke it on those two occasions. For his sake, I certainly hope there is no third time. That is not a fun injury. Alex from Tijuana, Mexico, a loyal Solomonster maniac, according to him, since episode 47. On July 13th, it was my birthday, but I would like to know if I can get a shout-out from my brother Juan Carlos, who turns 41 this Sunday, the 17th, Money in the Bank Sunday. Little brother, this is for you, he says. So, happy birthday to Juan. His question is, besides Hulk Hogan, has any other wrestler ever had 100% creative control or something close to it? And to the best of my knowledge, no. I don't believe in the U.S. I mean, I don't think this is the sort of thing they really deal much with in Japan or any other place in the world. But Hogan, when he came to WCW, had all the leverage in the world. He was badly wanted and recruited by Eric Bischoff and Ric Flair. back in 1994. He was filming Thunder in Paradise at the time. He had been out of WWF almost a year, and they really wanted him in. And they came up with a sweet deal. They acquiesced to whatever demands that he had. He got paid very handsomely. He got a huge cut of any pay-per-view revenue. I'm sure merchandise, although WCW never did merchandising nearly as well as WWF, even back in the day. But Hogan had 100% creative control built into his contract. Now, the only other person that I could think of when it comes to creative control being written into a contract, and I'm sure a lot of main event guys have had clauses in their contracts. I haven't seen the contracts. I can't confirm this. But a guy like Randy Savage, for example, going over to WCW, I'm sure must have had certain provisions in the contract, but by no means did he have the same provisions that Hogan had. You know, Bret Hart is the only other name I could think of. The whole Montreal thing, Bret Hart said that in his contract he has reasonable creative control in his last 30 days, which is not the same thing as 100% creative control all the time. So, when Warrior came over to WCW in 1998, I don't remember reading anything about there being any sort of provision or request on his part to have 100% creative control. And personally, if Warrior only went to WCW to lose a match to Hogan, I find that hard to believe. You know, obviously he had no problem losing. I'm sure they paid him very well. Had he 100% creative control, I would think that putting him in the ring with Hogan, who also had 100% creative control, what would have happened if neither man wanted to lose to the other? Contractually, legally speaking. You know, Warrior has taken people to court before. He's taken Vince McMahon to court and won. I don't think that's a mess WCW would have wanted to get themselves into. So I don't think Warrior even had that provision. I could be wrong, but I don't even think he did. So I can't think of anybody else. You know, Hogan, in many ways, Hogan truly is the smartest man in wrestling, like him or not. Jimmy, a fan of the podcast, wrote in with a pretty cool story I wanted to share really quickly here with everybody. He said, I've been hooked since the show where you suggested a Sister of Destruction storyline. That was a pretty good idea. So I figured I'd share my story of my one day working for WWE. SmackDown was recently at an arena that I work at. The job I hold there is called a runner, which basically means we run and buy things for whatever show is there. When I heard SmackDown was coming, I jumped at the opportunity to work, so I spent all day backstage. I actually set up Vince McMahon's office for the day and Teddy Long's TV office. There were a couple of cool things that happened that day. I got to see what it takes to make an average episode of SmackDown work. There was no shortage of divas. I even got to help Joey Styles find his way out of the parking garage. And at one point, I turned down a hallway and almost bumped into Mark Henry. Needless to say, I was scared shitless. For me, the best part of the night came at the end. When Vince McMahon was leaving, he popped his head into the office, thanked us for helping out, and told us to have a good night. Just an all-around great day. So that comes from Jimmy. Thank you for sharing that. And last but not least here, we have Tapio all the way over from Finland. Dear Solid Monster, thanks for running a great podcast. I've listened since, well, I don't know, but probably pre-100. Though I've had long breaks and skipped weeks here and there, but nowadays, as my interest towards wrestling has waned, I wait for your podcast more and more. Kind of funny how that goes. I used to watch Raw every week live and fast-forward SmackDowns, but nowadays I generally fast-forward Raw the day after and skip SmackDown altogether. I have a slight request. You might have gotten it from other people as well, but anyway, would you think it's possible to release sound-offs on WWE pay-per-view weeks, or weekends, I should say, a couple of hours at least before the show? It would be quite cool to catch up with your predictions and such before the event. Also, it would occupy me and other European listeners as they start late over here. For example, pay-per-views go live at 3 a.m. for me. Even if I am a night owl, sometimes that just gets really boring, and that's when the sound-off would be nothing short of a lifesaver. Thanks again for the great show. Well, you got your wish! You got your wish! Because as I am finishing recording here, it is Saturday evening, a full 24 hours plus before Money in the Bank. Plenty of time to check out those predictions and all the other news. So, Tapio, there you go, buddy. That's for you. If you have any requests, questions, comments, email me, solomonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/solomonster. I actually posted some funny stuff a little bit earlier today. And friend me on Facebook. We're inching our way up, closer and closer towards friend number 1,000. Will you be friend number 1,000? And if you are, might you get something special? I don't know. The only way to do it is to friend me. Facebook.com/TheSolomon. So we got some good discussions going on. There's going to be a lot of discussion going on tomorrow night during Money in the Bank. And the only official place to gather with all the other fans of The Sound Off is on Facebook. So definitely check that out. Of course, you could also subscribe to the show in iTunes. And if you do, if you are on Twitter, Facebook, and iTunes, you are officially part of the Triple Threat. A very exclusive group. You don't have to pay any dues. And it's just cool. Why wouldn't you want to be a part of that? So we're going to wrap this bad boy up here. Episode 168 is in the books. Money in the Bank is not yet in the books, but it will be soon. And it will be very sad if CM Punk does leave for good. But he's got one last match, and I think it's going to be a hell of a match. I'm looking forward to it. I'm really excited about this show, and I know a lot of you guys are too. So enjoy Money in the Bank. Keep it locked in right here, as always, to SEScoops.com. Twitter, Facebook. We'll be back at 169 next weekend. Until then, take care. Brush your hair. We'll see you right back here next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomon Monster sounds off on SEScoops.com.